All right, I'm going to call the October meeting of the Eastern Lancaster County Bull Board to order here. I'd like to welcome everybody that is out tonight, and we hope you find the meeting to be very informative. One note, on October the 12th, the board had an executive session to discuss personnel. All right, at this time, we have a moment of silence and Pledge of Allegiance to be led by Mr. Dahl. All right, we have the approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Are there any modifications? Hearing none, we have a motion to approve the agenda. Is there a second? All right, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Student of the Month presentation.
Thank you, President Wetzel and members of the school board. I'd like to introduce our Students of the Month this evening. Unfortunately, none of them could attend this evening, but I did want to introduce them anyway. Our freshman Student of the Month was Kelvin Guzman. And Kelvin is the son of Angelica Alvarado of New Holland, Pennsylvania. He's enrolled in several honors courses this year and is a member of our Garden Spot Servant Leadership Club. Our sophomore student of the month was Rocky Heisig. He is the son of Lindsay and Daniel Heisig from Denver, Pennsylvania. He has received honor roll status since middle school and is a member of our Leo Club. Our junior student of the month was Kayla Perry. Kayla is the daughter of Marcia and Darren Perry of New Holland. Kayla is taking honors courses and is a member of our marching band and swims competitively as well. And then finally, our senior student of the month was William Fithian. And William is the son of Renee and William Fithian of Narbonne, Pennsylvania. He's enrolled in dual enrollment courses, and he's been on honor roll since he was in middle school. He's a member of our marching band, our student council, and he was also recently crowned our homecoming king. Our student trait of the month was that of leadership, and I can always count on these four individuals to express that leadership throughout the course of the school year, so I appreciate them. And Dr. Hollister will have a certificate and medal to give them at a later date. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sanger. Dr. Hollister, you have traditional comments?
Yeah, we'll talk to them individually. We'll invite them down, and I'll have a moment to talk with them personally, so that'll work out just great. Thank you.
All right, moving right along to citizens of the district's comments. As always, it's up to 5 minutes. Justin will be our timekeeper over here, 4 minute warning, and then 5 minutes when your time is up. It's currently still reserved for citizens of the district and taxpayers of the district. That probably will be changing moving forward here shortly. All right, we have one online comment before we get to the people that are present here tonight.
Yes, Mr. President, we have one comment that was submitted online, and it is the prayer from Stephanie Shirk at 1645 Silver Valley East, Earl, PA. Loving and gracious God, you are indeed the giver of all good gifts, and we thank you today for all your blessings, for the successful outcomes of our school events, and for all our staff members, both the teaching and support members. We ask that you bless them abundantly, and we continue to seek your wisdom, guidance, courage, and strength. Be with us in the deliberations and help us to be wise in the decisions we make for the good of all those who have placed their trust and confidence in our leadership. Give us insight to lead with integrity, that our decisions may reflect what is right and good. Keep us from short-sightedness and pettiness. Help us to make decisions that are good for all and guard us from blind self-interest. Dear Lord, grant us the humility to always seek your will in all that we do and say. In Jesus' name, amen.
All right, thank you, Justin. All right, citizens in the meeting here tonight, Jennifer Jarvis will be the first one, followed by Sue Harple.
I'll go second. I'll
okay.
Go second.
All right, Sue.
Hi, my name's Sue Harpo. I'm from Narvon. I wanted to address the board tonight. I pulled my children out of Elanco to attend CCA, and I want to explain to you why I felt this was in the best interest of my children. I'm concerned with PA putting COVID-19 vaccine clinics in our school. This isn't right. I know you're going to say Elanco will not do it, but I'm worried if they offer the schools enough money, you're going to jump on it. At this point, I don't think I can believe what anyone says, because parents get up here to address the board and ask questions, but there's never any responses from you about what we're talking about, with the exception of the masks. Why don't you answer our questions? Even if you have to wait until the next board meeting to respond, would be better than nothing. Otherwise, we're all here wasting our time. When a student is asked a question by a teacher, a response is expected. After enrolling my children in CCA, I can see where Elanco is lacking in their education. My daughter struggles with math and comprehension. I have brought this to the attention of her IEP team multiple times, as well as her teachers. They did acknowledge what I had to say and how I felt. However, nothing changes with the curriculum. At CCA, not only did they listen to my concerns, they tested her. After the testing was completed, they contacted me to inform me she's having a serious struggle. They were able to accommodate her needs at her level. Everything for her is done at a slower pace so she can comprehend it. There's no jumping back and forth between addition, subtraction, and multiplication. She stays on each one for a few weeks, and then they mix it up so we can see exactly where she is and what she's getting. Hopefully, this works better for her. So my question is, why can CCA make accommodations for her to succeed, but Elanco wants to do everything their way? I know there was a request last week at the board meeting about cameras being installed in our classrooms so that we can see what's really going on in our schools. We all know you're not going to put the money out because there would be no monetary benefit at the end for the school. It seems to me that it's all about the money, not the students. It's almost like you have something to hide. I can tell you at CCA, they welcome all parents to the live sessions so all parents know what's being said and what is going on with our children's school curriculum. Now on to the reason I'm thankful I pulled them when I did. And I hope everyone's paying attention, and I hope I have your attention now. It's come to my attention from multiple parents that a book called Lighter Than My Shadow, written by Katie Green, was checked out of the middle school library by an eighth grader that was highly disturbed by the images depicted in this book and the content of the story. The story is about a girl that has an eating disorder.
You cannot raise placards during the meeting. That's in our policy.
The story is about a girl that has an eating disorder and is being molested by her school's guidance counselor. The illustrations in this book are nothing short of pedophilia, pornography, and grooming. Graphic images of molestation. Why are our children being exposed to this and have access to this kind of trash inside our school's library? And who approved for this book to be in here anyway? Are there any more books of this nature in our libraries district-wide? How would you feel if your eighth-grade daughter came home with this book? I would be ticked. We're demanding an audit of all the books in the school's library immediately. At this point, I truly hope I have everyone's attention, and the parents of Elanco seriously consider cyber schools for their children until Elanco can figure out where they stand with the education. Parents, if we stand together against this and pull our children out, Elanco will wake up and see it our way, because they would be losing money. Sometimes the only way to get the attention is to lose the money. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Sue. Jennifer, followed by Michelle Good.
First and foremost, any teacher that teaches CRT or undermines the Constitution needs to be fired and their pensions forfeited. Secondly, has this book been brought to any of your attention prior to this past weekend or this board meeting? Can I have at least a yes or no answer on that? Has this book been brought to your attention as being in the library and a parent not feeling comfortable with it that her child brought it home?
No, not until Friday.
No? Anybody else? No? Nobody else has seen this book?
No. I'll say I saw it and I heard it was taken out of the library.
You should have did your due diligence as a board member and the vice president of this board, and went and spoke to the librarian, seen if there was more copies, and seen what other content was in the library. Instead, it looks like it was just swept under the rug. If it was brought to your attention, then action should have immediately happened on the content of that level inside of our schools. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Michelle Good, followed by Mike Good.
My name is Michelle Good, and I live in New Holland. I am a substitute teacher, lunch monitor, para-substitute, PTO treasurer, and parent volunteer at New Holland Elementary School. Basically, I'm there every day in one or more of these roles. I absolutely love working with the dedicated staff and wonderful students at New Holland. I love seeing older students stop and chat with Mrs. Peters, who always gives her time. The encouragement from Mrs. Esslinger to all of her students is never ending. Mrs. Lapp never misses an opportunity to throw football with her students during brain breaks. I've seen Mrs. Lawson do dance-off with her sixth graders. I can't imagine how tired Mrs. Klingen was going through the inflatable obstacle course 8 times with her students last year. I love how my second grader makes bunny origami for Mrs. Lundstedt because, quote, she's the best teacher ever. I love hearing my fourth grader tell me how Mr. Beebe plays kickball and soccer with them at recess. And my heart sings when Miss McCoach has high fives ready for my girls. I cannot brag enough about our staff and the energy and smiles they bring every day for our students. But those teacher smiles quickly fade and the energy is gone when the classroom is empty. Our teachers are tired, stressed out, and overwhelmed. I always stop and ask the teachers if they need help. And the common sense response is yes, but they don't know with what, sometimes with tears in their eyes. Today is the 33rd day of school, but it feels like day 175. The staff is May tired. They are being pulled in 4 different directions and are stretched very thin. They are lacking support. We as a school are lacking support. We have had at least 3 substitute teachers who will not return to our building due to our relaxed masking policy, a policy that was not supported by the teachers, a policy that you, the board, created. The lack of substitutes causes the teachers to cover other classes during their prep. It causes the administration to cover classes and not be available for the rest of the building. And ultimately, if coverage cannot be found, classes are split among other classrooms. This lack of support creates a toxic environment for them to work in, and I'd hate for teachers to leave because of it. Last Tuesday, I was a librarian substitute in the morning and a fifth grade teacher in the afternoon. We didn't have another substitute for another fifth grade class, so that class was split among all the fifth grade classes. I was teaching 2 different fifth grade lesson plans at the same time, which was fine. I know the kids, they're comfortable with me. On Wednesday, I subbed for the class that was split the previous day. Almost every student who walked through those doors asked if I was there for the entire day or if they were going to get split again. You could see the anxiety melt away when I told them I was there for the entire day, and it was a great day. But unfortunately, on Thursday, there wasn't a substitute available, and the same class was split up again. This leads to unnecessary stress for the teachers and the students, and it will continue to happen until we get more substitutes in the building again. This can be fixed by changing the masking policy and keeping the current quarantining policy. Substitutes are not just concerned about getting sick. Substitutes don't get sick days. They don't get health insurance. So when an illness happens, we're out of a paycheck. This 21-22 school year needs to be filled with great compassion for our teachers and staff. They have been nothing but generous with our situations at home over the past 2 years. It's now our turn to show them the kindness and compassion they deserve. We need to respect the teachers' time and not overload it with endless meetings and paperwork. We need to support the teachers with substitutes so they aren't losing family time in the evenings and weekends. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Good, followed by Sean Reese.
Hey, just a reminder, gang, we're not going to applaud, we're not going to cheer, we're going to maintain our decorum of a professional meeting for all. Thank you.
Yeah. Good evening. My name is Mike Good, and I live and work in New Holland. I'm also a Garden Spot graduate. Thank you for your continuous work in leading our school district through these unprecedented times. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to present challenges for the learners, staff, and administrators in our district. I believe most of us agree that it is best for learners to be physically present to maximize their educational potential. To this end, the district's mask policy for this school year is failing our community. Far more students are testing positive for COVID and missing school this year compared to last year when mask wearing and social distancing were enforced. I applaud the district for weekly emails informing parents of the numbers of positive cases at each school. However, the weekly numbers from last school year should be published in tandem as well so that the effect of the current mask policy can be easily discerned. If you are wondering how our school district compares to others in the county, look no further than the front page of the October 10th edition of the LMP newspaper. There you can find that our schools have more COVID-positive learners than districts multiple sizes of our own. This is a direct result of the lax policy that has been implemented, and it stands far outside the policies of other schools in our county. The district should follow the CDC recommendations, and exemptions to mask wearing should not be granted without a signed, valid form from a qualified medical doctor. Masks do indeed help to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Look no further than the difference in the number of cases within our school district between last year and this year, noting that we went from 100% of learners wearing masks to 50%. The issue of wearing a mask has become needlessly politicized. Prior to COVID and the 2020 election, no one ever questioned why their surgeon and the nurses in the operating room were wearing masks, or berated a cancer patient for being a sheeple for wearing a mask in public between chemo treatments. The time has come to reinstate last year's mask policy until the CDC changes its recommendations based on the conditions of the pandemic and to continue to exclude students who experienced close contact with a positive case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sean Reese, followed by Dave Horst.
Hello, my name is Sean Reese. I didn't really have a lot of remarks about the masking policy tonight, except to say that we should have a better one. That's all I'm going to say about that, as you know how I feel about that by now. I did want to say something more positive. On Friday, my daughter's kindergarten class went on a field trip to Brecknock Orchard. Mr. Dahl, your son did as well, and they're in the same class. And she had a great time. She loved it. She was so excited to bring her apple and her pumpkin home. And my wife, who's a PTO officer at New Holland, informed me happily that was paid for by the New Holland PTO, And I just want to say what a great job the New Holland PTO is doing of supporting the kids there, as well as the teachers, as I'm sure other building PTOs are as well. And I would just encourage all of you to see how you can get involved in your school's PTO to help out the learners there as well. The other thing I wanted to talk about tonight was the MOU that's on the agenda to be voted about. I know there was some concern expressed at the last meeting about asking about teachers' vaccination status. I'm at a school where I teach that has a pretty similar policy. And the way it was framed where I teach is that they don't technically ask you. You can just voluntarily show that you're vaccinated to get that different sick leave policy. So you're not actually asking anyone, you know, because that was, I think, something the school wanted to be careful about. The other thing is, Mr. Conroy, you brought up last week that masking is a personal choice, or not masking, sorry, vaccines is a personal choice. And I do agree with you, but there's plenty of other things that are personal choices, too, that the government or the school district incentivize. For example, it's a personal choice for a teacher to decide whether to get a master's degree or not. But that doesn't stop the school from incentivizing that by providing for tuition reimbursement. It's a personal choice to get married or not, but there's over 1,000 tax breaks in our current federal tax code for people who choose to do that. So it's fine to recognize vaccination as a personal choice and still also feel like our school should do our part to encourage it of our teachers of their own volition. I saw today LG Health Penn Medicine put out their most recent COVID numbers. Every single patient with COVID right now in Lancaster General Health is ICU is unvaccinated. Every single patient on a ventilator at LG Health is unvaccinated as well. Draw your own conclusions. That being said, if that is still a road that you do not want to go down, I would encourage the board to give these 10 extra sick days to everybody then, rather than not providing them at all. We can disagree about the extent of the risk, but the reality is our teachers are at risk in the classroom to COVID due to our masking policy, due to larger class sizes because of having to combine classrooms, due to staffing shortages. They have had to teach hybrid again for a second year online and in person at the same time. As other commenters have said, it leaves the teachers feeling burnout and tired. I had the somewhat dark thought this morning that McDonald's has done more to support our teachers so far this year by providing them with free breakfast last week. I would urge you, if you don't want to discriminate or separate based on vaccination status, I would encourage you to give these 10 extra sick days to every staff member and teacher in the building. It is the least you can do to show your support during these difficult times. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave Horst, followed by Stephen Hurst.
Good evening, board. Dave Horst, 1186 East Earl Road. Last week, talking about the vaccination for the teachers and stuff, something came to my mind, and you can, I don't know if the administration was given copies of Dr. Gordon Donaldson's.
The doctor from Morgantown? Yeah. No, I did not give that to the administration.
Okay. I would encourage the administration to ask the president, Tom, for a copy of that.
I'm sorry.
It's my own family
Mr. Hurst,
doctor.
What is a darticle or what is
it? No. Dr. Donaldson has gone from state to state during the COVID outbreak. He's, as of 6 months ago, we were at a talk he gave, and he had treated over 3,000 patients at that time. He used ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, along with vitamins and zinc. He lost zero patients out of 3,000 and some. One man was actually 93 years old. Many of the people had pre-existing conditions. Some of the patients that he had decided they wanted to go to the hospital. Many of them did die under the hospital's care, but he did not lose a single person in over 3,000. I would suggest, and he said, and Pfizer's own website says that for the first 7 to 10 days after somebody gets the vaccination, they're as communicative as somebody that has COVID. They transmit the spike proteins to other people and make them sick just as much as somebody that has COVID. So if you're getting a lot of students now that they're allowed to get vaccines, your numbers are going to go through the roof if they get them, because they're going to be shedding onto other students. If you want to know the truth, I know there's information everywhere and you can find anything from A to Z as far as COVID goes, but Dr. Gordon Donaldson, I'm sure, if you contacted him and set something up, he would love to come and talk to the district, the teachers, the board, even parents, if you have like the gymnasium set up for a night, and everybody could ask questions and you could find out from an honest practicing physician or family doctor what at least he believes the truth is. It might help everybody. It might take the stress out of this and actually accomplish a lot more than we could hope for. We're all going to be talking back and forth because we've got our information from different places. This would be somebody that I trust and has treated over 3,000 people and not lost a single one. His word's probably pretty good. So thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
Good night.
Stephen Hurst, followed by Diane Boone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm Stephen Hurst, live in East Earl Township. I'd like to start by extending my gratitude to the board for continuing to take up a bottom-up approach. I know this is an extraordinary time for board members and parents alike. I personally feel that some members have listened to parents and concerns, recommendations, and have taken it upon themselves to do research based on what we have discussed. Thank you. So thank you for hearing us, and I hope that we can continue to work together through these challenging times. Every day, it seems there are new studies emerging, shedding light on COVID as it ever evolves. Pick a subject, whether it be masking, vaccines, quarantine, the science is becoming more and more clear every day. Recently, I have learned, touching on another topic here, recently I've learned of surveys in the elementary and secondary levels that I see as a concern. When did it become the business of schools to conduct surveys on such a personal level? The children are being asked questions, especially on the elementary level. I'm sure they cannot even comprehend what is being asked of them. Then there's the Pennsylvania Youth Survey. These types of surveys should not be given to children under the age of 18 to fill out by themselves. These types of surveys need to be sent home, addressed to parents, so that they can sit down with their children and decide whether or not they're even going to answer these questions. And they should not just be mentioned on the week at a glance. Why does it seem that the school is trying to take over our role as parents, and why are we not being more informed? The lack of transparency is developing a trust issue between the parents and the district. This could be a reason the topic of cameras in classrooms is being brought up. Not a fan of a surveillance state, but I understand the concerns. There's so much more that could be talked about, so many different topics that are happening right now. But I would just appreciate if our education system could get back to educating, basic education. We as a nation have strayed from the biblical foundation on which our country was built, and sadly the school system has followed suit. We would love to see that change. We need to set the standard. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Diane Boone, followed by Tony Bellina.
Hi, my name is Diane Boone. I'm from East Earl Township, New Holland. I normally have something eloquently prepared, but my day got away with me, so I'm just going to go how the spirit leads me with a couple notes that I made from last week's meeting. Last week, you guys talked about a memorandum with the Teachers Association regarding sick leave, and I'm guessing tonight you're going to vote on that. But my concern is that you're voting on or discussing giving teachers that got the jab extra 10 days of sick leave, but you're going to penalize the teachers that didn't without any extra sick leave. And so if a teacher that didn't get the jab gets sick, and they don't have enough sick time, they're going to get penalized and not get a paycheck. But the teachers that did get the jab are going to get an extra 10 days. Here's my thing. I've got family members that got the jab, and I've got family members that didn't. I have two currently in the hospital, that did get the jab. I have other family members, myself included, got COVID. We didn't get the jab. We pulled through it. We did miss some time off work. But we didn't end up in the hospital. And I understand that last week you guys talked about, well, if our teachers end up in the hospital, we have to pay that bill. Okay? So regardless of whether the teacher got the jab or the teacher didn't get the jab, and maybe they had some other issues that went along with it that caused them to go into the hospital, I feel like you shouldn't be penalizing them, and they should all get the equal amount of sick time regardless of what their medical status is. My mother ended up in the hospital. Yes, she had COVID, but COVID isn't what put her in the hospital. What put her in the hospital was that she got so dehydrated because she couldn't get the fluids in her that she needed to. Okay? I'm just a little concerned that you're not treating our teachers fairly. Another mom just pointed out that our teachers are overworked, they're stressed out, they're taxed out, and now you're going to add something else on them to worry about, that if they get sick, they're not going to get paid. I really wish that you guys could reconsider the sick leave memorandum that you're fixing to pass and give all the teachers equal amount of sick time. It's not fair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Tony? Please.
Hello, Tony Bellini from Denver, PA. I don't have anything prepared again, but here we go. This is from This Week at a Glance. This is signed by Dr. Robert M. Hollister. These are the current week's actual stats here. Garden spot 7th through 12th, 10 cases, 6 students. It's almost like in a group like children who aren't susceptible to severe illness from COVID and death, it's almost like the normal thing to happen without masks is for it to spike temporarily and spread through the kids, and then they develop antibodies, and then the numbers start going down. It's almost like that. Okay. Number two, the slippery slope here with giving teachers who get the vaccine 10 days of extra sick time. What are we going to do? Are we going to say teachers who maintain a normal weight get 10 extra days of sick time? If they can show they went to the gym 3 days a week for so many weeks in a row, they get 10 extra days of sick time. In fact, I would think that if the jab works so well, you need less sick time if you got the jab. Mm-hmm. Just a thought.
All right.
Okay. The teachers being stressed out, the being, you know, worn thin. I feel for everybody in this situation. People are working overtime. They're working hard, but it seems like some people want to put it back on the kids. These are adult problems. These are adult decisions. These are things that we create as adults. And when the board get stressed out about what's going on, the right answer is not to put it back on the kids. We want kids in the classroom. We want kids in the classroom, so we should mask them. Well, my son wasn't in the classroom when he was masked. Couldn't go to school. Headaches every day. Debilitating. My daughter, she wasn't in the classroom when she was at a day hospital. The 51% increase in, I'm going to say it every time I speak, 51% increase in teenage female suicide since this began. None of those kids will ever be in class again. Okay? We're not going to let you guys, not you guys alone, I'm talking about everybody, I'm not saying this directly at the board, we're not going to let you put it back on our kids. Find better ways to deal with staffing shortages, the workload, whatever we have to do. The answer is not to put it back on the children. We're here for them, not for us. The parents, the school board, the teachers, we're either there for them or we're there for something else. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for everyone that had citizens' comments tonight. Moving on, we have the consent agenda. Please, sir. Move on to the consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
The moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Been properly moved in second. Discussion. Personnel report.
Yes, we have a new teacher on the personnel report who's here this evening, and Kara Martin will be introducing her.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to introduce Rochelle Whitcomb, who's on the agenda for approval this evening. Rochelle is coming to us with 6 years' experience of teaching learners with autism. She received her undergraduate in elementary and special education from Millersville University, and then her master's in autism from Penn State. So she's on your agenda for approval for an elementary autistic support teacher.
Okay, thank you. I always tease a little bit here. Can you give us a little lighthearted background on you, what your hobbies are, where you grew up, everything like that?
Sure. I'm from Denver, PA.
All right, around the corner.
In the Cook-Alico District.
The dean's from back there, too. We'll give you a pass on that.
I enjoy
for tonight, anyway.
Pets, time with my family, ice hockey, go Flyers.
Appreciate you, and we'll be... see more of you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the consent agenda?
Mr. President?
Yes.
Just want to make note on the minutes for the 20th of September. It marks me as present when I was, in fact, absent. Just want that noted.
All right, duly noted. Any other discussion on items listed in the consent agenda? All right.
So we need to talk about the approval, the revision of policy 334 for sick leave. We would do that now, right?
Correct.
Okay, I think it's worth discussing then. I'm willing to discuss it, but to be up front, my understanding is that I need to abstain from that vote because it affects a family member.
Correct.
But I would like to talk about it a little bit, leave it up for discussion. I struggle a little bit with offering the incentive for those who have not been vaccinated. I get it that we want to have our teachers there as much as possible, but I do like what some of the people here said tonight. I do like the potentiality of offering extra sick days to everybody. I think that that's a fair and reasonable approach. I mean, I know many people last year that after the support happened, after I think it was December of last year, the staff lost the sick day support. And so I know that a lot of staff lost that time. And so I think that would be a simple way to help all the staff. There's a variety of reasons why people can, can't, shouldn't get the vaccine. And I think it's just a line that I'm not comfortable crossing for myself personally. But again, I know I can't. Yeah.
Mr. Buck, I appreciate your comments. I think that that's under the action items, not the consent agenda.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I was going to say,
that's
too.
That's what we're discussing now.
Yeah. It's under the consent agenda.
We haven't. No, it's not.
No, it's
The MOU for the live streaming is under the consent agenda, but the MOU for absences is under action items number
six. Yeah, we pulled that out because we knew you wanted to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Right. So that's not 334 then?
No.
That's a different sick leave.
That's correct, yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
But that also does affect all
employees. Okay. I gotcha. Sorry, I had my notes open and I flip-flopped them. Okay.
But Mr. Buck, it was a good speech. And
I had that prepared, man. It was...
Just frame it.
Hold that thought. We'll get right back to it here shortly.
All right. Any other discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. President, can we just acknowledge the new teacher that just joined our staff?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, we'll do. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Michelle, thanks for joining our team. We're really glad to bring you on board. It's a great school district. You're going to love it here. Typically, people who come here from other school districts really appreciate us, so we hope you find the same thing. Thanks for joining us.
And the other parts of that, Dr. Hollister, do you want to frame the hiring, the meeting minutes or something?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. That's what I typically do. So I would recommend you download our meeting minutes and our agenda, put that in your scrapbook, your professional scrapbook, because it's always an important moment when you join a team. I have all the ones from all the schools I've served over the many decades, so you want to make sure you do that too. It's a little thing. Don't forget to do it. All right? Thanks.
All right. Thank you. All right. Moving on to action items that were removed from the consent agenda for separate consideration. We will start with 7A. Do I have a motion to approve 7A?
So moved.
Been properly moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Been seconded. Are any discussion on this?
Yeah, can we play back the tape?
Yes.
All right, well, I already said my piece, but I can't vote on it, so I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I just want, for two things, clarification on that. So it's an MOU with the Teachers Association. So my spouse is an employee, but she's not part of the Teachers Association. Should I not vote?
Yeah, the intention would be that we have to sign a legal agreement with our Teachers Association because they're in a union environment, union shop. This would apply to all support staff as well. So it would be appropriate for any board members who have any relatives working for the organization to abstain. Thank you.
Abstain. Yep. All right, thanks. The second thing, I would agree with Gary's sentiments. I think that if we're going to provide some sick leave, it should be for all faculty, not just specifically for those who've met some qualification in regards to vaccination status. I think that the original intent of the 10 days, which we were doing previously, was to allow for those who are sick to not come to work and not worry about their paycheck or their status as an employee. I think that the intent of this should be to do the same. We want to encourage symptomatic individuals to stay home and work from home if they're able to, but certainly not have to worry about it if they're not able to, regardless of vaccination status.
And I think I would tend to agree with that, because you look at everything that's going on in the world where, at least in this country anyway, with mandates and everything for penal people being policemen and nurses and things being penalized for their personal feelings about not getting the shot or whether they had the virus or not or whatever. And I think this would be also a good groundwork to lay out to our association and everything, that we're looking out for all of our teachers and not just those that were vaccinated that were willing to do that, but those that, for whatever reason, do not feel the need to be vaccinated. So that's my position.
No, I agree with that also, but my question is, are other districts doing something like this, or?
It's all over.
I'm just curious.
It's all over. Some are, some aren't. Last year, when the order came down from the federal government, we were all doing the same thing as Mr. Naranjo indicated. This really is trying to mimic what we had in place last year for the reasons that both Mr. Buck and Mr. Naranjo stated a few minutes ago. So, yeah.
Dr. Hollister, was this something that the union had kind of said, hey, can we do this for the staff? Or was this did it come from someplace else? Or where did this actually come from?
They requested. We have regular, semi-regular meetings with the association when they have a small list of items to address. We talk about it. This has been in discussion for not quite a while now, probably 6 to 8 weeks. And they did ask for additional days. Further discussions sort of led to this attempt to try and, get a few more folks vaccinated. But I fully would support and appreciate if the board would extend the 10 days. If it's for all, that's great, too. I do think it's needed. As a point of information, if the board does go this direction, what we would do is those who've already been out because of COVID, they would be also available. These days would be available to them. So we would retro that. Grandfather retro it, yeah, because we had some cases like that already this year. So we want to make sure that we took care of those folks as well.
What are we looking at as far as what this will cost the district in substitutes or replacing the staff? Just do we have an estimate?
We don't have an estimate because we don't know how many people are going to get sick. But, you know, our sub rate, our pay is $125 a day. Keep in mind, we do have some ESSER's funds that are designated specifically for addressing all of the issues that come along with COVID. So, you know, the federal government has given us money to budget for these kinds of things.
Sir, am I right in assuming that we would need those subs regardless of whether or not we were paying
Correct.
People to be at home?
Right, yeah, so you would. Right. And the memorandum that was in the consent agenda is that's intended to try to keep our teachers in play,
right.
even if they're quarantined. I can't quarantine, but if they're excluded, or if they're even sick but feeling up the teaching, which is, right. you know, again, we want to see our teachers running classrooms as to the greatest extent possible, where possible.
Thank you.
And this is specifically tied to, obviously, COVID, so they would have to show proof of that, I'm guessing, in order to qualify for this.
Right.
Correct?
So we, you know, we get notified when they have COVID, so, yeah, we would apply it that way.
And then how would the, if this has a sunset of the end of the year, how would that apply if you're retroing that? Would they just have 10 extra vacation days, essentially?
That they No. So the 10 days only goes to COVID. You know,
but I'm saying if they had been sick with COVID already and out, how would you retro that?
We would backfill sick days that they had to take. Or if some ran out of sick days, which can happen, we would retro personal days that they may have taken.
Copy. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion?
Just so you know, you need to either amend it
or withdraw.
Kill this motion.
Paul, would you like to withdraw it?
Or amend it.
Either way, you can do it. Go either way. Do you want to amend the motion to include all teachers in the extra sick days?
Well, should we do all teachers or all employees?
Right now, it's
It's an MOU with the teachers.
Yes.
So you stay focused on the teachers.
Yes.
But
okay.
But our assumption as administrators is it does apply to all, or would apply to all,
Minus STS employees.
Minus
so
STS.
Substitutes
that's
and
that's
restaurants
different.
Are not.
They're subcontracted.
Who are not employees of the district.
Correct. Thank you.
They're subcontractors.
Well, would you like to amend the motion to?
I would.
Okay. You have the, Justin, you have the, how it's amended. Do I have a second to the amendment?
Second.
Been seconded. Any further discussion on the amendment? Justin, would you like to read the motion?
I'll do my best.
You always do your best, Justin.
Mr. Irvine amended his motion to approve the MOU regarding absences due to COVID-19 and teleworking to include all teachers in Section 3.
Any further discussion on that?
So are you saying that the 10 extra days will expire at the end of the year? They won't be able to be carried over?
That's correct.
Okay.
If they don't use them, those 10 days can only be used for a COVID scenario.
Okay.
So it's sort of a separate bucket that they can tap if they need it, and then they fall away at the end of the school year.
And if COVID continues, which
then
we don't
we'll
know,
take it up this summer.
Take it up again next school year.
You and the new superintendent will take it up this summer.
Glad to remind us about that, aren't you? All right. Any further discussion? All right. All in favor in the motion as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to 7B, the district COVID-19 health and safety plan updates and clarifications. I think, Gary, you might have some clarification. You took minutes at the meeting.
I took minutes?
Notes.
And I have some here also.
Do we need a motion first to discuss this, or do we?
So I have, yeah, I'll make a motion. I'll pass these out so that at least everybody can read specifically and have clarity on what I'm saying. But my motion would be to amend the contact tracing section E that is in the health and safety plan to say this. Learners and staff will be sent home if they present with severe symptoms as assessed by the school nurse that are closely associated with COVID-19. The nurse will strongly recommend these learners or staff to be tested with COVID-19 based on the nature of their symptoms. If these learners or staff test positive for COVID-19, they will quarantine for the number of days based on their doctor's recommendation. If these learners or staff are tested negative for COVID-19, they may return to school when symptoms are no longer present for a minimum of 24 hours. If these learners or staff decide not to get a test or not to get tested, they should remain home until symptoms are no longer present for a minimum of 24 hours. Learners and or staff within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more of a positive case will be notified of their exposure through contact tracing in the school, and unless present with symptoms, these learners and or staff will be allowed to remain in school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is there a second, please? Is there a second?
Second.
And properly moved in second. It's open to discussion.
Can you define severe symptoms? Is that based on how it's written up in our health and safety plan, or can you give me an example? Like, what is versus a regular symptom? What's a severe symptom?
That's the language already used in our health and safety
plan. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's been left to the nurses to decipher.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. Can we? I don't know, maybe, like, what did it say before? Like, how, I don't mean to sound ignorant, and I don't have my iPad with me. I forgot it at home, so I can't review back. Like, what was it said beforehand that we're changing it to now? There's some of these things.
I think there was different interpretations of what was stated.
Correct.
I think this, from my understanding, was what it was saying. I just tried to rearrange and clarify with more of a bullet point so that we know exactly what the process will need to be that the administration and the staff will need to take.
Okay. Like I said, I forgot my iPad at home with all my information on, so it was sounding very similar to me, so I was curious as to, like, what was actually changing.
So, Brian, what you're saying, that last paragraph, there are learners or staff within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more of a positive case will be not notified of their exposure through contact tracing in the school. And unless they present symptoms, that learners and staff will be allowed to remain in school. So that means, like say you're told today that tomorrow you can be back in school?
Correct.
I think that's a little short.
With the designation being there that you're asymptomatic, you're not showing symptoms.
It doesn't say that. Unless symptoms. Unless present symptoms.
Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Derek? Because we had a meeting with the nurses, and Gary, maybe you'd like to elaborate. You know, from what my understanding coming out of that meeting was that they would like at least with, I don't know, was it 7 days? I forget, with testing.
Well, there's a lot of variables in there. I mean, there's the how many days it typically takes. What they have found now, I guess, she was emphasizing to us that we need to start changing our vernacular and calling this COVID and more distinct or distinctly calling this one the Delta. They're saying almost the Delta variant exclusively right now as opposed to COVID-19. Yes. And the Delta, what they're finding now, for better or worse, is when people are exposed, they're getting the symptoms a lot more quickly than they used to. It used to be with COVID-19 last year, she said that it seemed to be
12
dormitory longer, and now we're seeing the results more quickly, which in some ways makes it easy for us to kind of figure out if someone actually is sick or not.
Gary, were they saying then that there are tests that are specific to Delta versus the other ones?
No.
Because I've not heard.
No.
Well, then how is it that
no.
they know that?
Oh, are there
like
tests?
Like, Delta test, like if somebody has Delta versus regular COVID, like what's the difference? What's the test? There?
I don't know.
I don't think there is one. That's what I'm saying. Like, how would they even know?
As far as I know,
that's what
everything right now,
Gary,
is
that's
just Delta.
Just what you were being told. So I understand that. I'm just trying to, I mean, as far as, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Is Kara here? Or
Kara is, but I can also, the nurses did not say a specific test for Delta, but it is the Delta variant that they are seeing spreading much more quickly.
Right. But that's I guess, the point of how is it that is determined Delta versus the normal, right? Like, there's nothing that I've ever seen, positive or negative, right? So I'm not even going to play that game of I'm on one side versus the other to say, we just hear this thing Delta all the time. And so to that point, and I appreciate that they're seeing this, but if there's no test for it, how do they see it? I mean, I even wonder that with anything we see out there informationally that we all gather, right, from wherever we gather it from, how does anybody know that they have that unless the doctor's telling them, oh, you have the Delta variant versus the Zane variant or Alpha variant or whatever variant that's out there, but there's nothing there.
Well, Kara, you can correct me if I'm wrong, or Nadine, you too, as far as I think what the main thing what she was saying was that what we're seeing in our students in our this year is that when they have a close contact with somebody, if that student, if people their close contacts are going to show symptoms, it seems to be happening much sooner.
Yes.
Correct.
And Penn Medicine is the one that's telling everybody it's the Delta variant.
Right.
It's still COVID.
Yes.
COVID is COVID.
I understand.
But the Delta variant is what
so there,
we're hearing from Penn Medicine.
The assumption is exactly what you're saying, that, oh, because it's spreading quicker, that must be. That's what, at least it becomes a
I
piece
think that's
of,
what they're saying, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Excuse me.
Anybody else have any other comments?
Again, I'm just thinking out loud here based on the conversation we had earlier, is that I'm all for making sure we have healthy students that aren't at home. I'm just wondering if there is any kind of happy medium here where we tell the students to wait 1 or 2 days. You know, just I mean a lot of this is you know, there is no specific perfect way of doing this, and we're all guessing in many ways. But I just wonder if that is true. If it is true that the symptoms are popping up much quicker than it used to, I'm just wondering if I'm not completely comfortable with saying that someone was sitting right next to someone with COVID today at 3 o'clock, and then those students who are sitting next to them, high-fiving or whatever, right back in school the next day. Just as far as if we're trying to mitigate the spread at all, but I'm just wondering if there's a happy medium there of a day or two at least. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud that we're processing.
I mean, Mr. Conroy, thank you for writing this up. As I'm looking at it, I kind of see what you wrote up as three separate thoughts, you know, that I don't know if I could agree with at 100% down the line, especially like as Mr. Buck said, I don't see how we cannot take any mitigating steps. I'm not a huge fan of the if a learner decides not to get a test, obviously that's their choice. I don't know how to process that yet. So I guess what I'm asking is, would you have any ability to kind of break this up into three separate, I guess it would be motions, would be broken up to be like the first four sentences, the fifth, and then the sixth, because I see them as three different thoughts.
I don't think that's a problem. So I'll rescind the motion. Hey, at least it's written down this time, right? Do you want me to speak out? Should I speak out, Tom, the whole first section again?
Whatever,
Justin,
whatever
is that
you
better
have
for you? To go with, or are you okay with 1, 2, 3, the first four sentences that I have.
And that's...
If I was going to break this up, I would go with the first four sentences. They seem like one
fault. And that's similar to what we had, very similar to what we had before.
All right, so the first motion would be to take the first four sentences that I have written out as my first motion.
Do I have a second for that?
A second.
All right, it's been properly moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion on that? All right, hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
So I'll make another motion of sentence 5, which specifically states if these learners or staff decide not to get tested, they should remain home until symptoms are no longer present for a minimum of 24 hours.
Okay, can we define, when you say if these learners, you're kind of presupposing the sentences that came before. Can you just define for me what learner specifically are you talking about for this?
If
a symptomatic learner, so if learners have been sent home with symptoms or staff with symptoms decide not to get tested, they should remain home until symptoms are no longer present for a minimum of 24 hours.
But these are people who are symptomatic.
Symptomatic.
And exposed to somebody who's
positive. And exposed to COVID.
Or are you...
Not exposures. This is straight up sent home. So if learners or staff...
Okay. So just symptomatic, but not necessarily exposed to COVID.
Correct.
So I think we might want to just maybe define that in the how we say this.
Right.
So we're very clear.
So we're saying that...
Exposure to a positive case.
There would be a case. I think you probably should have somebody, if they'd be tested, that they should be able to come back right away.
They can in the above one.
Yeah, if someone obviously chooses to get tested and it's negative, obviously bring them back to school that day. It's fine, no problem. Assuming they're feeling up to it.
Yeah.
I don't think I can support, you know, if someone's symptomatic, and it's anecdotal, and I get it. But, you know, I've heard friends that have had COVID that feel great one day, feel terrible the next, start feeling better, but then start getting sick again the day after. I just don't think I could support a 24-hour wait on that without some kind of documentation to support a negative.
That was kind of my thought. It's like, because in the previous motion, we're saying if you have symptoms and you're test positive, you have to quarantine for, say, 10 days. But if you have symptoms and you don't get tested, you don't have to quarantine.
That doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I understand if you don't want to get tested, but if you're, you know, symptomatic, you should be treated the same way as if you are symptomatic and were tested.
Any further discussion?
Do you have that motion, Justin? I want to make sure that I have that right. Or that you have what I'm...
Yes, Mr. Conroy, I currently have that you made a motion to amend the Health and Safety Plan Section E, the paragraph 5, so that if learners decide not to get tested, they should remain home, right? They should remain home until no symptoms are no longer present for a minimum of 24 hours.
Yeah, I'll clarify it a little bit if you don't mind then, just to make sure. The motion specifically will be if learners or staff who are symptomatic and sent home decide not to get tested for COVID-19, they should remain home until symptoms are no longer present for a minimum of 24 hours.
Any further discussion?
And the biggest thing to the comments that were made, I was trying to think through as I was listening at the same time, just so everybody knows. If they're sent home with a cough, a upset stomach, why would I get my child tested for that and go through that process when, I don't know, they had bad McDonald's that day or something, right? So that's where I have a hard time not having that option, knowing that there are possible real cases of, like, somebody just got sick
normal, right? That's why I'm saying.
But my argument would be, you know, I mean, I have five children, you know, all older now, but I'd rather err on the side of being safe and getting them tested, knowing just to be it safe, you know, because this thing's all over the board. You know, some people get it very mildly, others get it horribly.
Yeah, but to be clear, these are people who have not been necessarily exposed to COVID, correct?
Just kids who got sick or don't feel well or haven't.
I mean,
tested,
to me, what you basically stated here is what we've always or supposed to have been doing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It really is what anybody should do, just in any normal day in and day out, getting sick, going home. You know,
that is what we do normally. This, my understanding for the health and safety plan is for when you are a close contact, because it's contact tracing, isolation, and quarantine. Right. So unless this is what you want to do for a close COVID contact, this would actually be what we normally do for no matter what your kid goes home with. If you're not a close contact, you wouldn't fall under the protocol of the close contact tracing.
Right, and my understanding, Brian, what you're saying, this is not, you're not referring to close contacts here.
Correct.
All right.
The difference would be my understanding of the nurse and their staff, whoever's there that day, if they send a child home because they think they have COVID, right? Like, it is all dependent on them evaluating the student.
Which is symptomatic of COVID.
And right, and they have symptoms of some kind, and they do that. Like, how are we designating? Maybe Nadine, maybe you have an answer to that. Like, how do they designate, oh, this student is just sick, can go home, and they come back tomorrow, right? Versus the code, like, are they doing a checkbox somewhere? I mean, I don't know.
I'll answer, and then I'll look at Kara.
Yeah.
But my understanding is we really pay attention to if they've had a close contact. And when we talk to parents, we ask them as well that specific question. Am I wrong about that, Kara, or right?
You're right on that.
Please.
Unless the symptoms, unless the symptoms are fever or vomiting, because that happened, that has a special 48 hours, correct? 24. They can't come to school if they have a fever or a vomiting, and they have to not have a fever or not vomiting for 24 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if they're not in a close contact, we wouldn't be looking for COVID.
Okay, so we're already doing that. We're not looking for COVID necessarily at that point.
Right.
Okay.
All right, any further discussion? You ready to vote?
Wait. So what are you asking us to vote on then? We're asking to confirm the existing.
I guess I would then have to just clarify. So if just to clarify, then are we saying, Kara and Nadine, maybe that a student today who comes in sick to the office, headache, sick stomach, I don't know, vomited, goes home, all we're asking them is stay home for 24 hours of not having those symptoms, you can come back.
As long as they have not had a close contact with anybody that was positive COVID, yes.
As of right now, correct?
Yes, that's what we do.
Okay.
So we don't need that.
Okay,
if that's what we do, then do we need...
Right. Then I can rescind that motion specifically at this time.
Yeah. We still want to discuss your last sentence.
The last
right,
one then,
separate.
Right, is I will make a motion that learners and or staff within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more of a positive case will be notified of the exposure through contact tracing in the school. Unless they present symptoms, these learners and or staff will be allowed to remain in school.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. It's been properly moved and second. Discussion. No time limit in that.
Correct.
I just have concerns, and I don't know what the time should be. I just have concerns going down that road, you know, like what was the, usually with this Delta variant, it was usually within a few days that most of it is shown. Kara, could you refresh my mind there? Quicker.
But we have already determined that you cannot determine a Delta variant, really.
I think just throw that out the window for a second. But I think what you're saying is that the COVID cases that we're seeing now, whatever you want to call it, she is seeing it, and we're looking at the statistics, so she's seeing that they're demonstrating within about 2 days of exposure.
All right, so can I play devil's advocate for a moment?
Sure.
So let's say that we were to amend this and we come up with a time window of 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to pick on the staff because I know how overwhelming the process is. So what percentage of our students are notified within 48 hours that they've been exposed? I'm not asking the crowd, so please don't respond.
Yes.
Now that we've had a chance to catch up, we're in the last 2 weeks, we've been 2 weeks, right? We've been within 48 hours
of when we're notified.
Thank you. When we're notified,
right?
We don't know until people tell us.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and that's just because what we're finding, I think, and I think you would agree, Dr. Larkin, is that a person typically doesn't know for 48 hours because they have to wait for a test if they choose to get one. And so we're finding out after that window, typically, if we were to even suggest one. So what we're probably better off doing is continuing to tell people to monitor for symptoms. And if your child's sick, keep them out of school. And if they're sick enough to go to the doctor, take them to the doctor. The doctor will suggest you get tested or not tested. Right? And that's what you're proposing.
Exactly. Bro. I agree.
I mean, in a lot of these scenarios, and again, I know how overwhelming the task is to try and figure out these contacts and let people know and wait. I know we're at the mercy of waiting to hear back from doctors and those who may or may not have been exposed or tested. But we're just like, you know, in a lot of these scenarios where our kids are like past the recommended quarantine periods by the time they're even notified. So I'm not suggesting there's a perfect answer here, but like I think we're already missing the window for a lot of people. And for those who aren't and are sitting at home asymptomatic and healthy, really we're just putting them behind the eight ball. I mean, the teachers can't accommodate the multiple learning methods. We're asking a lot of them, too much. Asymptomatic kids should be in school.
Nadine, is there any chance that you would find out in less than 48 hours? Has it happened yet at all, or do you think that could?
Are you saying 48 hours from when?
When the contact was.
It depends on, not often. Not often.
Okay.
Do we have any sense last year when we were... I think last year we were officially quarantining versus this year. But when we were quarantining last year, of those that were sent home because they were a close contact, do we have any idea how many of them actually ended up getting COVID while they were sitting at home? Like, was it a large percentage? Was it a minute percentage? Do we have any kind of ballpark on that? Same is true for this year. The kids that have quarantined in the last number of weeks, how many of them ended up positive? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, we don't know offhand, John. Okay. I don't even know that we could calculate that at this point.
Okay.
I would caution the board. Last year was a pretty different scenario than this year. The variables are a lot different this year than they were last year. So I don't know that even a comparison between sort of COVID and and this new Delta variant that seems to be the dominant variant is even a reasonable conversation.
Do you have any anecdotal information from this year then?
Yeah, again, anecdotals get you in trouble because you could pull, that's what too many people sort of pull anecdotals and then make generalizations. I think it's a mistake to say anecdotally. I have anecdotes of all different kinds, but I think it's unfair to do that because it's not really data driven then.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
No.
Motion carries.
So with that, if I can then clarify, now with that carried through, just to make sure from the fifth one that I rescinded before, normal kids, symptomatic, go home. They don't need to get a test. Don't need to do anything. We'll continue to go through hey, make sure you're not throwing up. Don't have a fever for 24 hours. We'll be coming back then to school, correct?
So long as they have not had contact with a positive case.
Well, the positive case part, though, then kicks into if they 24 hours. Again, 24 hours, if they were positive, if they were there with, if they were sent home even for the positive and they have symptoms, they go home for 24 hours. If the symptoms aren't present for 24 hours, whatever the symptoms might be.
No, I think we're confusing the
right.
Yes, sir.
Right. So I think both Dr. Larkin and Kara clarified this, right? Like if there has not been an exposure to a positive case, but the nurse sends them home for whatever the symptoms might be, they can return if they're 24-hour symptom-free of any fever, vomiting, et cetera.
So then what we haven't addressed is...
But I think we have addressed it. But if they're a contact of a known positive case and showing symptoms that are related to... COVID-19. That's the scenario where then they'd have to be tested or see their doctor.
Yep. And you're seeing that in which there's first section?
No, that's what the policy already says. Mm-hmm. And we haven't addressed that in any different way.
With tonight, right now, you're saying? Or you're saying the current policy, the way that it stands. Right, that's what I'm saying, is that we haven't necessarily addressed...
Oh, no, that's not... We have not addressed that in
correct,
any way.
Correct, right. So we have...
If you are symptomatic and have been exposed to a known positive...
Correct.
There's nothing different about what we've done.
Okay. I'm just wondering if that's going to cause then any confusion for administration when it comes to how you're tracking and who you're tracking if they came down to the office and they're sick, and whether or not we need to address a sick student and how we had contact traced them to a positive case. To know what to do.
Yeah. If they're close contact, we'll know through our contact tracing.
And if they get symptoms,
then they'd be excluded till they either test, till they get a positive test or a negative test.
Correct. Right. And so that's where, if then, Gary, to your point of what you were saying before, if the Section 5 there was to specifically state contact traced symptomatic learner or staff, that would be the difference there because it was contact traced with symptoms.
So we're saying that the number five is not what you were saying it was?
Just as far as what you were asking before, because you were saying these were not contact traced kids.
Right. I think that's what you were asking about.
Correct. That. And that's where I hadn't said that. But yeah, correct. So in that case, it would be a matter of whether we want to discuss, I think we should, to saying contact traced kids that are symptomatic and decide not to get tested, and what we would do with those students.
If I'm understanding you correctly, at this point, they would be out 10 days.
Correct. And I'm saying that I don't know that that's what needs to happen for those students
that are symptomatic after being exposed but choose not to get tested.
Correct. Because the exposure, I mean, again, what? Yeah, yes, that's what I'm saying.
Can I just summarize what I think you're saying, just to make sure I understand? You're saying if a student or a teacher is close to a student who is confirmed positive, they themselves start getting symptoms. You're saying that in 24 hours of those symptoms dissolving, they can come back to school if they choose not to get a test and not wait the 10 days.
Correct, but only because I think that, again, it needs to be more defined than just as simple as that. And that's why I think we need to discuss it, because if they're not getting tested, do we really know where that person got symptoms from? I mean, we just had the fair a week and a half ago, right? And so you were sitting next to another kid who maybe had COVID, but you actually got COVID, but you didn't get it from that kid. You got it from your aunt, your uncle, or whomever from Effort that came to the fair at New Holland, right? So how you understand and delineate specific cases that are in school, which I know we've talked about a little bit, I think that contact trace, it does. I think it needs to be at least clarified so that there's some understanding. And we're really not addressing that.
However, we do have a policy in place for that occurrence already.
Yeah, I understand that you can get COVID from anywhere, but I'm just trying to make sure I understand you, Brian. I mean, but to me, like, if you are close to someone who has tested positive and you start demonstrating symptoms, I think we do need to take extra caution there in that specific situation.
Yeah. And then, okay, Gary, so with that, then what we are saying to again, I just want to make sure we're communicating this correctly. In paragraph 4, line 4 of the first motion that we did pass, if those learners, so this could be even cases that are contact traced, right? They test negative for COVID-19, they may return to school when symptoms are no longer present, correct? So
if they've taken a test.
If they take the test, correct. So at that point, if a contact student has symptoms, get a test, it's negative, come back to school 2 days later, as soon as the test is negative. Symptom free, come back, yeah.
24 hours symptom free with a negative test.
Yes. Okay. Dr. Larkin, that made sense?
I'll just put it out there that Department of Health and Penn Medicine have told us very clearly that there needs to be two negative tests within 24 to 36 hours of each other of a home test. So this doesn't make that
just
work.
No, I'll say, just because I'm bringing these motions up, I will say, no, I appreciate that information. I do. I do. But that's not what we are following based on what these motions were right now, correct?
Correct. With this motion the way it is, yes.
Okay.
We just haven't differentiated the home test versus a regular test.
I believe that's another talking point.
Right.
Or another item we're going to be talking about here.
Right.
Is the protocols for home tests. To me, I see that as separate.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Just moving on to the other things we had down there, antibody testing, home COVID testing, and exclusion protocol.
Well, I can bring up first the home COVID-19 testing. I met with, again, Ms. Hoover earlier tonight with the president. We talked about the idea of possibly using home testing kits and what that would look like. Dr. Larkin mentioned that you do need, according to that system, is two tests in a row because they're not quite as reliable, but they feel like with two in a row, you get an accurate result. The issue that I had, of course, was that their availability. I'm not sure how readily available they are, and I think we're looking into that a little bit. I know it's difficult to just get them at CVS, or I know you can get them on Amazon. I personally would be comfortable with, at least I think giving people more options is helpful. So I would personally be fine if we wanted to follow those guidelines and accept two home testing kits. They're still cheaper than, going to urgent care and doing it that way. But it still takes a little bit of time. But it is an option that I'd be fine with.
Gary, did the nurses have any concern over the integrity of the test taker?
Not if it's two. I think that was
correct.
That's my correction. Understanding, right?
I mean, what I'm referring to, if
the test taker, the person taking the test,
is the person.
Well, okay. Here's the reason that the thinking that we had behind that was because you can go to CVS. You can shove your thing up your nose. I mean, a lot of these are self-administered testing that you do yourself anyway. You're paying the money to do it, so you have to. To me, there is a trust factor involved. People are doing it the right way, but you're also spending the money to do it. And my hope is that if you're spending the money to do it, you're really going to try to do it the right way and not try to just buck the system. And so there is an integrity thing there that hopefully we can trust, everyone to do the right thing there. But I think we were comfortable with that.
How do we know they're even taking the test? I could just call and say, right?
Well, they still have to show proof of the test. They paid for it.
It gives you an email confirmation of who the patient is.
And we would ask for, we need to take, we need to have procedures in place. And some of those procedures that other districts have used that we're looking at, if we approve this, would be taking a picture of the box, taking a picture of the serial number with the person's name underneath it, so that, hopefully that will give us enough as well to prove that it's not necessarily, as long as we trust the parent doing it.
Right.
So, President Wenzel, I guess I should make a motion, shouldn't I?
That would be.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, we can make a motion, and then we can discuss it further. Yeah. So I'd like to make a motion that we accept home COVID-19 testing kits as an option for our health and safety plan, and that the kits, we require two testing for each one used.
All right, do we have a second on that?
I'll second.
All right. Any more discussion on that?
If the test comes back positive, the one comes back positive, that we need to have a doctor. That is also with Penn Medicine. So if the first one comes back positive, we need to have the doctor do another test.
Why is that? Did they say
A positive.
Or just counts
as
a positive.
And that's in the directions, yes.
So it's really not a problem unless it's a negative. I mean, what people are looking for is a negative result.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you're saying a negative and a positive, they would need another test from a doctor showing a negative.
That's the directions in the home kit. We went to Stouffer's and found one and read the directions.
And is this something that we would be able to provide to families as well?
We don't have them here, no.
Okay.
Would be something they could get at CVS or Walmart or Amazon or Stouffer's.
And that would be, this is kind of separate from the motion, but I would fully support, especially families that might not be in a financial position. I don't want to exclude them or their kids from learning because of they don't want to pay the $20 or $40 for two tests. I think we need to figure out a way to make that available.
Yeah.
And then we can't force them to obviously take it, but we offer it as a service more than anything.
Yeah.
As far as the, you know, the positive and the negative test, my understanding from the motion is we're going to, the motion is we are going to accept them. It's the administration's job to figure out the procedures, correct? Or do we don't figure out the procedures on how to,
no.
what to correct. Accept. Okay.
And I believe, Kara, correct me if I'm wrong, you were, even before this, you were looking into more, you know, finding out how to get the availability of more of these home testing kits, if there's a way of getting them locally or otherwise, that there'd be a sufficient amount of them, correct?
Yeah, we were going to reach out to our local CVSs and other pharmacies and see if this is approved, if there's some way they could try to get more in stock than what they typically request, so that if we have a higher demand in the community, they'll be able to fulfill that.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I'll just say, I think that any due diligence on that side, I mean, I appreciate us reaching out to the community, CVS or Walgreens or whomever, but until I know that, I can't think of, I think we should just allow the test, whether they want to take the test or not, but two tests, and if we don't have them offered, I don't know that I can do that. Because we have no idea what those CVS, I doubt highly with everything going on. I mean, there is a point where I had went to try to find one, went to four CVSs, probably in a 40-mile radius, trying to find one that wasn't available. So it's...
Just so you know, they come with two tests in the kit.
Okay.
Those that require them.
Mr. Conroy, I appreciate your saying, but I would be on the side that where I would land on this motion is I would approve it. So going forward, as supply chains... you know, get solved. We don't need to re-bring it up. It's the groundwork is already laid so that those that are lucky enough apparently to get a test immediately can get their kid back in school as quickly as possible.
So, okay, so with that too, if they go to the ER or they go to urgent care and they get, are we going to require two tests from them knowing that it's the same test that's being given if they get it from CVS?
Well, not the we're not saying the CVS test. We're saying there's a kit CVS.
There's an over-the-counter.
Oh, I understand. But at CVS, the BioX whatever one is the same one that some ERs or some doctors and some urgent cares also give. So I'm just clarifying, like, I think we almost need to say if you do it at home versus if you go to a doctor or an urgent care or something like that, because the same test is given at urgent cares as is you can get at CVS. But we're asking them if they buy it from CVS, you need two. But if you go to ER, urgent care, you only need one.
So I think all we're saying is that we're following the test administered protocols, right? So the doctor's saying you only need one test, we take one test. If you go to buy a box and it says you got to take two of them within 36 hours, you follow. That's the instructions we're following. So we're not yes. making up the rules. We're saying. Tests that we're going to make more options available, but follow the protocols that are established for how those tests are supposed to be both administered and accepted.
Correct. So the same test from a doctor is okay for one, but from the individual at home has to be two.
Correct. It's been administered, accepted, received, taken differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Any further discussion? All right, we all clear in the motion, or would you like Justin to restate it?
Please do.
Sure.
I think we just need to assume we're going to restate everything before
That's a good idea, yes.
Mr. Buck's motion was to accept home COVID-19 testing as an option for the health and safety plan requiring two tests.
Everybody clear?
Should it say within
the doctor,
24 or 36-hour window? That is.
I'd say the procedures will get figured out by the administrative team.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even know if we want the two test part. We're going to follow the instructions.
Correct.
Because this is evolving.
Because it's not necessarily subject to two tests.
You're saying not to take out the part about the two and then just let the administration figure that out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say that we're going to...
That's fine. My main point was just to make that an option for people, that they have
right.
that as an option.
Yeah, home COVID tests.
So I can amend it and take out the two testing. It's just
What's the process, though? Like, what process is it that we're following, that you're talking, the administrations or the WHO Department of Health that Nadine had mentioned?
Well, I mean, that's what the box says. Nadine just said you read the box, and the box says that.
We're just following the instructions in the box.
Yeah. So they're not making up the instructions.
So, okay, so it was, it's my misunderstanding. So that was specifically on the box of a specific test.
That's why it comes with two.
Or is it on, do we know if it's on all home tests that are out there?
I don't think we know, but.
I mean, this is where it's going to get, though, right? Because
I would agree, Brian, but I would also say that your job and my job as a board member is to create the options and let the administration handle the
right.
Process.
So if the box says one test to take, we're okay with one test.
I think you're digging too deep here.
I think we need to, though. If the box that I get from wherever I get it has one test needs, then are we okay with the one test based on the box that I take a picture of and do everything else?
That's what it specifies.
There are very few tests out there that is a one test. But if you would happen to get your hands on that, and again, that's why we're asking for the picture of the box along with the serial number, then we are gathering different sheets in that of all the different tests that are out there. But even from DOH, almost all the majorities are two test requirements. But again, if you happen to be lucky enough to get one that is that one test, we would follow those directions.
So we could just amend it, just say, and follow the native instructions on the box. I don't know if you want to, but or we just keep it as we had it.
You definitely want to drop the two test portion of that, because as it evolves,
right.
You know, by
change.
Next month.
Yep, I know. I agree.
So just drop the two test.
All right, we'll drop the two.
Follow the instructions.
I'd like to make the amendment to drop the two test part of the.
Because even you look at the vaccines, you know, the Johnson & Johnson was just like a one shot. And then you had the Moderna, Pfizer, and the other ones were all two shots. So it can vary from test to test, but predominantly most of them are going to be two tests. All right, any further discussion? Maybe you ought to. We need a second. Then second it. All right. Do you want to read the motion again, Justin, for clarity?
Mr. Buck amended his motion to accept home COVID-19 testings as an option for the health and safety plan.
All right, are you ready to vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Exclusion protocol.
We did that.
Covered that one already.
Oh, that's right.
It's the antibody.
Yeah, that's right, the antibody testing. All right. Well, we got into it a little bit, Gary. I think the only thing to recognize with the antibody right now is 3.5 months, but that might be up into discussion, if I'm correct, from our meeting.
Well, it wasn't just the antibody that I wanted to discuss. Was that, excuse me, last week I specifically mentioned just the studies that are out there. I found another one today from the University of Michigan that says that those who have previously had COVID, that originally they were saying that they, in this study they studied people who had it for 3 months, that showed their antibodies, and then they tested those exact same people 6 months later and found no depreciation at all. And then, of course, the consensus is that they keep looking forward to the future. Of course, we don't know the future, and none of us know. We can have theories. None of us know how long the antibodies will last for. We can speculate and we can hope. So I guess my original idea for tonight was to, I guess I can present a motion now and then we can discuss it. So my motion would be, let me pull it up here. I actually did write this one down just so I had it. I would like to make a motion to treat individuals in our district who can show proof of a COVID positive test and a positive antibody test be treated the same way as a person who has been vaccinated.
Second.
Been properly moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
Yeah, just for clarification, you're asking for both?
Yeah.
Because chances are, if you had it, you probably went to the doctor, so that would be confirmation for, and then
right. I mean, I know a lot of people who could prove that they tested positive, but never got an antibody test, so they wouldn't have both.
Correct.
Right. Wait, sorry, say that again?
I'm saying I know of a lot of people who tested positive and could prove that, but they would not have then additionally gotten an antibody test, and so they would not be able to present both things.
Right. No, I wasn't saying
your
both.
Statement says.
Oh, did I say both?
You said and.
Oh, sorry. I meant or. Yeah, sorry, let's amend that.
At least I heard and.
Okay, my mistake. I meant or. So I'd like to amend that to being or, not and.
Second.
All right, it's been amended.
So you would have had to have COVID and gotten tested.
Correct.
Or go get tested for the antibodies.
Correct.
Correct.
Yep. And if you... Okay. I find it tough just because if you had COVID but didn't know it or knew it and because you were so sick but didn't get tested, assumed it was back 6 months ago or a year ago, get tested for antibodies but don't have antibodies.
Well, then you're not protected.
You're out of luck.
Protected. Right.
And so we're going to exclude you because you didn't get sick. I don't
what?
See how that...
No, I'm just saying that there are certain things that we have in our health and safety plan and things that we do that we are saying for vaccinated people get to do this. And so mom's saying is that we shouldn't look at people who... The point is they're more protected.
Yeah.
And so people, the studies have shown that people who have had COVID and have the antibody tests have that same protection.
So should we do that, again, with the vaccinated part of that, like you just said... That those who are vaccinated or those who have had COVID or those who have the antibodies are more protected. Should we do that with the flu if they get vaccinated for the flu, right? I mean, I think this is the slippery slope we fall on when it comes to keep going down this. Okay, well, if I had the flu this year, then why do I need to worry about anything?
Any further discussion on the amendment?
How are we treating vaccinated students differently than unvaccinated students?
Well, we have different things in our health and safety plan. I mean, Nadine, you can speak to it.
If a person is vaccinated and they've been in a close contact, we recommend they call their doctor. Their doctor talks to them. And what they say is monitor for symptoms and wear a mask for 14 days. That's what we've been getting consistently from our doctors. So they do not need to be excluded. And that's what the most recent Department of Health, if they're asymptomatic, it says.
So my point is that there's little things that we're doing here and there, and I don't know what's coming down the line in the future, too. So I was trying to be a little bit proactive here as well.
That's why it's like I understand what you said even before, Brian, right? As far as what the board's role and all, let the kids come to school. Like, it's vaccinated, not vaccinated, asymptomatic, antibodies, had COVID a year and a half ago or didn't have COVID or get COVID like Colin Powell did just the other day and died, was vaccinated, right? I mean, it goes down constantly. Like, you get sick, stay home. You don't get sick, come to school.
Well, I'm trying to do that here as far as this is.
I don't think we all want to be in this, you know, looking at what's best for everybody, Brian. And I don't like that accusation that we're.
Well, it is a matter of, okay, well, then we need to very much specifically go down the list with administration, I think, and come up with every scenario for every kid. Because otherwise, it's going to be another month and we're going to sit here again having to go through another obstacles. Of making other motions for different scenarios.
Or we just stick with what we have.
I'm sorry, but that is exactly
what it is. Or we just stick with what we have. You know, this is just, I mean, we've been changing it since August.
I know, because of
this. Never occurred, maybe best sticking with what we had.
Well, my understanding of what we had versus the administration's understanding of what we had were completely different. So that was clear last meeting. That's why I did what I did this meeting. So... what we had didn't work, in my opinion, and that's why I came up with what I
as in not in not working. Our counts are down.
They are.
So what didn't work?
This isn't the argument.
I believe we have a motion and a second.
Yes, we do. Justin? What's the amendment?
Brian, I would just encourage you is I think I understand your grievances. I think they are two separate issues, though.
Yes.
A little bit here. So I think I understand your frustration. I think that what I'm presenting is a separate issue as far as what you're saying. I think it just feels like it's piling up for you. Okay, I'll try to read it again. So, okay, I would like to make the motion to treat individuals in our district who can show proof of a COVID-positive test or a positive antibody test be treated the same way as a person who has been vaccinated.
I don't disagree. My only question would be, have we already addressed this with the amendment we made in regards to symptomatic versus asymptomatic already? So we've already addressed if a student or a learner is asymptomatic, regardless of a contact, that we're not excluding them. So I think we've already addressed it, right? Because you're saying are you suggesting that if they've had COVID and are symptomatic, we would still not exclude them?
I'm just saying that anything that we have in our policies, now or in the future, there's not a whole lot right now. What I'm saying is just as far as setting precedent for going for the future is that we're anytime we refer to a vaccinated individual that we then say that a vaccinated and or person with COVID who has previously shown proof of positive test of COVID or.
Yeah, right. Anyways, I know. And I'm just arguing that I think we've already addressed that with the consideration between symptomatic versus asymptomatic and the statements we've already made, regardless of vaccination status, regardless of prior COVID status, we've said it.
I think in that case, yes, you're right. Yeah, so. I'm saying that there may be things that come up that we haven't even discussed yet. And Nadine mentioned one earlier that was not under that.
Any further discussion? All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. All right, that ends it for action items. Reports, Mr. Ramsey, the Lancaster County Tax Collection Bureau.
Yes, our next meeting is November 10th.
Thank you. The Lancaster Lebanon IU 13, Mr. Urban.
Thank you, Ms. President. The Lancaster Lebanon IU board met on October 13th, 2021. We approved payment of invoices in the amount of $15,807,607.39. Under business services, we approved five new or additions to existing contracts. Under early childhood and special education services, we approved 13 new or addition to existing contracts. Instructional services, technology services, we had seven new contracts. And human resources, we had two new contracts we approved. We had seven employees resign, four were terminated, three retired, hired 35 new employees, had 50 change of salary or position status, and granted 8 leave of absences. And we also approved the Lancaster Lebanon IU 13 comprehensive plan, which will go into effect. It is in effect already. We give it the final approval, though, which goes through June 30th, 2024. And I gave each of the board members and the administrators a copy of this and the Helping Districts Help Students. If anyone has any questions, I will answer your question now or get back to you with an answer as early as possible.
Any questions for Mr. Irvin? All right, thank you, Paul.
You're welcome.
Lancaster CTC, Mrs. Mayo.
Yes, thank you. The JOC met on September 23rd. We had a short meeting because it was board appreciation dinner, so like the JOC, the PAC, the GAC, the authority, and the foundation, and all the administrators were there, so that was a good portion of the evening. They were super excited because they had their first ever all-school in-service, all the adult ed and all the high school faculty and staff are together for the first time ever, which is really cool. I've been working on getting to that point for years. And the last thing I have is they were just established an articulation with Thaddeus Stevens for precision machining. And they can you can leave the CTC with 20 credits to transfer to Thaddeus Stevens, which is basically almost all the tech courses required for your first year at college, which is really cool. And that's all I have.
All right, any questions for Mrs. Mayo? Mm-hmm. All right, legislative, not a whole lot going on. I know the up in Harrisburg, they're still working on drawing the legislative lines for the coming years, for the next 10 years, for the House of Representatives. So we'll see how that shakes out. Superintendent's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just one action item for next month. This is a change in the policy for public participation that would allow parents of guest learners here to speak at board meetings. Do note the change in language from last week to this week. Last week was my armchair version of writing policy, and your version this week is from the solicitor. So I recommend we follow the solicitor. So we'll take action. That'll be an action item for the meeting next month. Just two information items that I'm excited to report about. We've had a real successful fall season with our athletes, despite all the challenges related to our field and surrounding areas. Field hockey won the Section 3 championship. This is the second year in a row for them. And they will play again, probably host a District 3 game as early as this coming Wednesday. Boys soccer also qualified for District 3 postseason play and is traveling on Monday for their opening round. And finally, cross country runs in the league championship tomorrow afternoon at Ephrata. So again, fall season's still underway, but we're starting to see some fruition from all the effort that both athletes and coaches put forth since this summer. On the academic side, we had some real success. I shared this with the board, just all the details of this, but our learners did an amazing job. If anyone got to see the work at the fair, our digital photography kids have really knocked it out of the park. They cleaned up. They just took all the firsts and seconds and a whole bunch of thirds along the way. I just want to acknowledge a few of the students who brought in hardware, Maya Graybill, Caitlin Zing, Benedict, Janae Benedict, Kayla Richardson, and Meta Ash. All of them brought in ribbons for their digital work. It's amazing. When we do those art shows, hopefully we'll get back to doing that this spring. It's incredible the eye that they have and the work that they do here in this facility. So congratulations to all of those students. I believe that concludes... That concludes my report. Thank you.
All right, any questions for Dr. Hollister?
Yeah, I wanted to ask in the public comments earlier tonight and over the weekend, the book that was addressed, you did share some comments in regards to.
So I don't disagree. I think there we own that error. I'm going to change protocols on how that access to those books takes place going forward. We may also put in, I have to talk to Dr. Larkin, put in a screening process that would further enhance that. But the major change is, those books with a mature theme, and in this particular case, as was indicated earlier, it's about anorexia and abuse, are real sensitive topics and really just shouldn't be available for any learner to pull off a shelf. So we're going to put some protocols in place to make sure that doesn't happen going forward. Including direct contact with parents for any student who really wants to view that material, so the parent would have to have approval. We'll put all that in place and have that there for you.
Yeah, which I appreciate, and I agree. I mean, the mature content, there's a lot of heavy topics that some kids are just not ready to deal with. I might go a little further. Just having seen some of the images that were shared from that book, I think that the graphic nature of that was very inappropriate,
yeah,
regardless of the venue
that's
or student.
I think I agree. That's why we'll run that through our other checks It may be one of those books that, you know, is only shared with a guidance counselor and a parent. You know, the reality of it is, there are families who are hurting out here, and there are kids who are hurting. And if a kid, especially a female, is being sexually molested, and this material might help them process and or report, I think it's worthy of having. But again, I don't disagree with you, Mr. Toronto. The visual content, it may not be the right choice for that message. So we'll take a look at that, and we'll report back to you next board meeting.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because I just think that, like, you know, there, we certainly wouldn't allow pornographic material to be in the library.
I agree.
I'm going to argue this is pornographic. I mean, have you administratively looked at the book? Have you seen the
those images. No, I haven't seen the book.
This is beyond. And I appreciate the understanding of anorexia, bulimia, and other illnesses like that that kids deal with 100% and need to be helped by guidance counselors. But this book should be burned and when it comes to it, and should be ripped apart. It's disgusting, molestation, rape that are in this book. And I don't think we would have that in any. I mean, I'm appalled that this is in our schools. This is sickening and makes me question the 321 other books that are on the mature list. And whoever says that they saw this book and actually looked at the images that are in this book that I've highlighted for you guys as board members to look, if you allowed this to go anywhere else, anywhere, you'd be thrown out of a job and fired immediately on the spot. I don't understand how we have let this in our school.
Mr. Conroy, I understand your words, whether you're yelling or speaking. It doesn't help to raise your voice.
Last week you did it to me. I'm doing it now.
Hey,
there's the book.
Calm down.
I'll calm down when I want.
I know that.
So this book needs to be completely out of our school and completely revamped when it comes to what goes into the school.
Any further discussion on this or anything other sensitive items? I might note that about 20 years ago when I was on school board, we went through a whole list of books at that time. Ken Mingledorf was on the board at the time, Pastor Ken Mingledorf. And obviously a mistake was made in this book. I'm not arguing with that with you, Brian. I don't think that's funny either. We made a mistake, and mistakes happen. I'm sure we all make mistakes. And all I can pledge is will not happen, but please.
Your board member turned a blind eye to that, and that can't support that. And anybody else here that knows
him, please.
He did, shouldn't support it. He's getting out of their ass.
All right. Thanks. Any other further discussion tonight?
Oh, I wanted to bring up just also quickly the. So I spoke to Dr. Larkin about Brain Pop, and it seems like when I talked to her that the most of the controversial material that concerned the board was over the content that was relegated to the social studies section. So, I know many of the teachers reached out to all of us board members and saying that they would like to. Brain Pop is a big part of their curriculum. And so I just would at least next week like to discuss it as part of our meeting, just discuss what it would look like if we were allowed to at least let them use the math, some of the other subject matters that wouldn't go into those areas. If anyone has any concerns or notices anything, concerns about Brain Pop in any of those other areas, you know, please bring them to our attention. But it's just we don't necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater there. At least we'll want to bring it to discussion next week to possibly put that to vote.
All right, thank you, Brian. Gary, that was a very good point. That we never knew we could separate some of the things in that. That would be something very good to discuss. Any other items for discussion? Just want to make a comment, Brian. You said about burning the book, ripping it to shreds. I agree. Whether we like it or not, we do have freedom of the press in this country. There are other countries in the world, mainly Nazi Germany that comes to mind, that had book burnings. I will argue it's not appropriate in the school, that is correct, but I cannot beef, or maybe you'd be for it, burning books in the parking lot. I don't know. I cannot stand for that. We have freedom of the press in this country for a reason. We don't have to agree with everything that's being put out there, and we can restrict what's being put out there. But we cannot have anarchy when it comes to this type of thing. Any other further discussion? Hearing none, do I have a motion to attend the meeting?
So moved.
Been properly moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? We will meet on November. Thank you. Good night.